What anti-oppressive pay means to me is really trying to remove or lessen the biases and oppressive impacts that systems, social systems, education systems, all the systems that we have conspire to impact pay. It can be things like the equal pay thing, but it can go beyond that to things like lessening the impact of the number of levels and paying people differently based on level, paying people differently based on function, paying people differently based on their individual performance.
Welcome back to the Growth Podcast Series, Inside Her CEO Journey. In this Growth Podcast Series, we share all the right tools so you can grow a sustainable and profitable business you love and enjoy. Last week, we started the series with Terry Maxwell, founder and CEO of Share on Purpose and Shiftco, a growth platform for conscious entrepreneurs. She is a serial entrepreneur and has a portfolio company under the brand Share on Purpose. Terry shares the pathway for conscious entrepreneurs to grow their businesses to seven figures. She uses a framework called Business Simple. It is not about the marketing system. It is about balancing the fulcrum between supply and demand and allowing yourself as the founder to evolve. Business is hard, but the process is simple. You're listening to her CEO Journey, the business finance podcast for mission-driven women entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Christina Shahli. If you are new here, a big warm welcome. If we are not connected on LinkedIn, please reach out and say hi, because that's where I hang out and share my business finance tips. If you have been listening to this podcast for a while and you are a regular listener, I want you to know I appreciate you. My podcast won't be around without your support. This is a free weekly show where my guests and I want to inspire you to balance between mission and profit, to create an impact in this world, and to achieve financial equality through your business for good. In the second episode of this growth series, it's all about compensation structure. In the recent years, as you know, many organizations are racing to implement fair pay and pay equity plans. Our guest today is Kate Dixon, founder and CEO of Dixon Consulting, a certified B Corporation. She believes this effort to address inequities in pay rarely address the systemic factors within compensation that contribute to differences in pay. In this episode, Kate shares how you as a founder must think beyond pay equity and towards designing pay structures that holds the lens of systemic anti-oppression. Now, you can have all the tools and big vision to create an anti-oppressive pay within your company. But often, a founder forgets to structure the business financial aspect to support the big vision she has. You want to think about your pricing and gross margin, and if they can support the vision you have in mind for the business. If you are wondering what is missing from your pricing, unit costs, and gross margins that allows you to grow a profitable and sustainable business, connect with us at theprofitreimagine.com/let's chat, and our fractional CFO can help you. Now, let's find out Kate's CEO journey. Kate Dixon, welcome to her CEO journey. It is a pleasure to have you here today.
It's so great to be with you.
So as you know, every single guest in this podcast, I always start about the journey, because entrepreneurship is not easy. And then there is always a reason why you started your business. So let's start with your journey and how you built this company.
So my journey is a little bit different than a lot of people's, because this is actually the third business that I've started. I had a consulting practice back when my kids were really little, about 20 years ago. And then I built a bath and body products business, completely unrelated to whatever else I do. And I loved doing that, but I had to stop that because I was in a corporate job and I just couldn't service my clients. So, and then it was about 4.5 years ago, I had the opportunity to go out on my own again. And because I had really enjoyed my work in my consulting practice before, I just couldn't wait to get started. And so I started the business and thought it was going to be more of a leadership development practice. Most of my career is in corporate compensation. So paying people is kind of what I did for most of my career, but I really love leadership development. I got to be a certified coach, love that too. And what I found is that there was really more of a gap in the compensation consulting and salary negotiation space that I felt like, wow, okay, this is not happening in the market as much as I think it could be. And so that's when I decided to kind of really lean into that experience that I've had for my career. And after doing what I thought was the right thing, I ran into some folks who had B Corp certification. And I thought, wow, that is the coolest thing. And it's really aligned with my values, what I care about. And so I decided to go for certification back in 2020 and finally got through the entire process late last year in 2021.
One thing that intrigued me when I was doing my research to speak with you is about one of the blog that you wrote. The title is Anti-Oppressive Pay Beyond Pay Equity. What is anti-oppressive pay?
I think it's a great question. So a lot of people who are doing really heavy-duty DE&I work, the companies are investing heavily in what they call pay equity or equal pay. And typically that's driven by the law, federal law, which there are some, and then states have other laws that may be even more restrictive. But essentially what they're there to do is make sure that people who are doing the same work are paid the same regardless of gender identity or racial or ethnicity identity. So that's what they're designed to do. But the way that those laws are structured, they're pretty narrow, kind of what I call weasel room, to still have some bad habits, because the narrower you look at a job or the narrower your focus is, the easier it is to comply. But it's also maybe you're not comparing folks who probably should be compared. What anti-oppressive pay means to me is really trying to remove or lessen the biases and oppressive impacts that systems, social systems, education systems, all the systems that we have conspire to impact pay. It can be things like the equal pay thing, but it can go beyond that to things like lessening the impact of the number of levels and paying people differently based on level, paying people differently based on function, paying people differently based on their individual performance. All of those things are very, very common to do within an organization. There's not a lot of people saying, hey, that's not cool. That's not what we want to do. That's harmful. But when you really peel things back, we realize that oppressive systems really do impact all of these different factors that determine individual pay.
So for founders that are started to build their team and they need to design a compensation structure, how and where do they even start?
I think the big thing that you're going to want to do is look at it and say, how far do we want to go in this arena? I mean, there's some things that are really easy to do. You know, I would recommend trying to get those low-hanging fruit things immediately, like providing the exact same benefits to everybody at every level in the organization. That's something that's really easy to do. But I think too, you know, really being conscious about what systems are coming into play. One of the big things that I recommend clients do is take a very clear look at individual performance and how much of a factor that is in determining pay. We know a ton of research has been done over time that shows that the very same behaviors, when they're done by different groups, are looked at differently. And I think we can all relate to this, right? a man might be forceful and he's seen as a leader, a woman or a person of color might be forceful and they're seen as bitchy or, you know, something that's not as positive, right?
Oh yeah, I hear you.
We know that the behavior standards for the cultural norm of the company, which is almost always going to be white and male, the acceptable range of behaviors is much, much wider for white males than it is for any other group. So if the performance standards are different, do you really want to use that as a big factor to determine pay? I don't think so. I don't think you do. And it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be paying attention to performance or whatever, but just don't use it as a pay thing. Use it as an opportunity for, you know, development and those kinds of things, but don't base pay based on that.
Here's what I'm interested to find out. If you don't pay based on individual performance, what would the compensation structures look like?
So I think there are two things that are wrapped up in here. So let me address one after the other. The first piece is, you know, if you're not going to give people pay increases, annual pay increases based on performance, which is the standard in the United States, right? What could you do instead? And one of the things that I recommend to clients is to do a, you know, cost of living or cost of labor adjustment that looks at the change over the course of the year in how much it costs for labor, right? And, you know, again, this is something that is based on market pay and there are troubles with market pay as well, but I don't think you can necessarily throw market pay out altogether. So first answer is do some sort of an adjustment that you apply evenly to everybody. So it's either, you know, everybody gets a $5,000 increase or everybody gets a 3.5% increase, but whatever you do, do it the same for people. So I think that's one of the ways that folks can do it. I also think that if you're going to use performance, use organization performance, right? It's totally okay to look at the performance of the organization and look at that together. And, you know, I've got lots of clients who have profit sharing plans. That's a beautiful way to do it because, again, with profit sharing, people get the same amount or same percent, and that is based on the performance of the entire company. I think there's a myth too about individual performance that one person can be successful by themselves and everybody else, you know, doesn't matter. And I just don't think that's true. You know, it takes the entire team, even to, you know, to support like a brilliant designer or a rock star salesperson. The entire team is conspiring for that success to not base pay based on what the entire team is doing really negates the contributions of everybody. But I think that you can do things like not express differences functionally. I've got a client that basically they have two structures. One is for their tech people because they're a software company, right? And they're in the Silicon Valley and they're competing for that tech talent. So they've got one structure for that group. And then all the other functions are paid in a similar way. They have their own structure. So finance is not different than HR, is not different than marketing. And all of those roles get paid within the same salary structure. So they do recognize levels. They don't have 100,000 levels. In fact, you know, the fewer levels that you can use to express the differences in the kinds of work that you have, the better. But I think that's one way that companies can limit oppressive effects, right? Limit that functional difference, limit the number of levels. Can you get away from that altogether? I don't think so. But the more you do to lessen these impacts, the better.
I have basically read about gravity payment, Dan Price, where he paid everyone a minimum salary of $70,000. The next question that I have, how do you value people with more experience?
I actually have a nonprofit client, and I can't talk about them yet, but they just raised their minimum to $59,600. They came up with it based on housing indexes, right? Which is something that as a B Corp, they encourage us to, you know, consider living wages, housing wages, those kinds of things. And so they're basing it based on that, and which is easily twice what those jobs pay on average in the market. Those, you know, kind of entry-level jobs get paid in the market. And what they're doing with this is everybody gets at least this minimum. And, you know, it does take a little bit longer to get to a position where you're going to get more than that. And I think everybody's okay with that because they know that they're getting a super huge premium in the marketplace. And yes, there are plenty of jobs that pay more than that within this organization. And there are some people who will never, they love the work that they are doing and they're never going to strive to be in these different other jobs because this is the kind of work they find the most rewarding. One of the things that we know is challenging is when we try to get people to move to different jobs just in order to make enough money so that they can live, you know? And, you know, if they don't want to do that, if they're providing a huge valuable service, being able to pay them in the same kind of way that other folks who have other jobs get paid can be really, really exciting for the organization.
Now, in an organization that there are not many levels, it's likely to be easier to implement this type of changes. What I have seen with startup, especially, and growth stage business, growth stage startups, from the very beginning, there is the founders, and then after that, the founders are going to start hiring the management team. And because they want to buy in the best talent out there, they started paying more for the management team and compensate and attract those talents to come in. So even at the very beginning, there is already level because they may start with a vice president level, a COO level, a CFO level, and all that stuff. What would be your advice to this founder, if they are going to build their management teams, how do they should communicate to this new talents coming in that there is no level?
Let me just start with a no level thing, because I don't think that having no levels is practical for virtually any organization. I mean, even the organizations like my nonprofit client that really have a ton of beautiful anti-oppressive pieces already incorporated into their total rewards, they want to have levels that helps them really communicate differences in expectations for roles and stuff like that. And so it works really well. Now they have three levels of non-exempt work, non-exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act. So three levels of that, three levels of individual contributor that are exempt. They have three levels of management all told. Now, they put some of those levels together so that somebody who's in, let's say, the third level of non-exempt, the second level of individual contributor exempt, and the first level of manager, those folks are all paid in the same pay range. So my client has six levels all told in their whole organization. So, I mean, I think you can explain things with pretty few levels. But again, when you have enough, stop. But I think, you know, you have to look at it holistically. What are you going to add? What are you going to take away to reduce the impact of systemic oppression on pay? So to answer your question about your founder who's just starting to build their team and they want to build the C-suite first. So maybe the CEO is one level, maybe the C-suite is one level, and maybe you have two levels of people who are not manager, you know, and that works until you get to 30 people or 60 people. I don't know. But explain the levels with as few levels as you can. And I think that's good enough, right? And same with functions.
So you already explained about levels. And then now let's go to the functions. Can you elaborate a little bit about the functional fuse? What does that mean?
So functions, we typically think of them as things like finance and operations and sales and marketing and HR and engineering. That's what we think of when we think of job functions. And what's interesting is if you kind of look at the behind the scenes reason for differences in pay by function, I think we're most of us are familiar with kind of the white collar, blue collar, pink collar concepts, right? White collar is the management job in an office, right? Blue collar tends to be more of the technical work like mechanic or an HVAC person or something like that, right? And pink collar tends to be jobs like nurses and teachers and administrative assistants. And if you kind of look at these, they also represent different functions. And pink collar jobs, primarily held by women, traditionally, right? Blue collar jobs, traditionally held by people of color. White collar jobs, traditionally held by white men. And so the way that we valued different functional work is an expression of the concept, right? The fact that we pay more for people who manage other people than we do for folks who are running the administration, that's just that's a mental thing, right? Some people say that, you know, executive administrative folks run the company. And to a certain extent, that's true, but they don't get paid like they run the company. And so, you know, having functional differences, we look at HR versus finance. Those two are two support functions that are meant to support the operations of the organization. Finance, much more heavily populated by men. HR, much more heavily populated by women. Finance jobs pay more in the market than HR jobs, typically, the ones at the same level, right? There's really no reason behind it. You know, oftentimes people have the same kind of qualifications. Oh, you have an MBA. I have an MBA. You have 10 years of experience. I have 10 years of experience. But the market says we should pay those differently. Well, there are more barriers to entry into some of these finance jobs than there are into HR jobs, typically, right? There are more barriers to get into technology roles because of the test scores that are required to get into a college, the requirements that happen in the college major. There's all kinds of things that are coming into play. And we know there aren't very many people of color who are coming out with technical degrees and experience in that, right? Just not as many as we see in white guys typically, right? So if you're seeing a difference in population in a function, and there's a difference in pay between those two functions, that's where you want to get really curious. Now, one thing that I will say, the market for technology folks is super duper hot right now, and the competition is just crazy. And I think that this probably would not be the time that I would recommend people who require a very high degree of technology proficiency, you know, especially companies that are software companies, or they're selling software as a service, or they're interfacing with hardware companies or whatever. This is not the time to say, oh, we're going to pay these folks exactly the same as we pay all the other folks, unless you're going to bring the other functions up to what you're paying the tech folks. I just don't think this is the time to do it. But between other functional differences, you probably don't have as much ground to stand on in terms of should they be, you know, should finance and HR be paid differently? Probably not.
It's interesting that you brought up the market, because I feel that even if you want to apply this anti-oppressive pay within a business, it's still driven by the market. And then also looking at the market shouldn't be the standard, but yet we are being impacted by the market in so many levels.
So yeah, it's going to have to drive some stuff, but does it have to drive everything? No. And one of the ways that you can part companies with market data is saying, hey, we're not going to recognize every functional difference in pay. We're just going to put everybody at the same level into the same salary range. That is a departure from quote unquote standard market pay. Every time you depart from an individual pay pricing model, you're departing from the market. And that's okay. That really is okay. And it's a done thing. It's done by every compensation program that I know of, but be thoughtful about how you're doing it, right? Do you want to bring functions together? If that's one of your goals, you can do that by using market pay to help you decide where about that should be. If you're trying to compress the number of levels, you can use your market data to help you decide where to put position each of the salary ranges that go along with that.
Let's say that a client comes to you and then they are like, you know, founders with a management team and then they're trying to grow more, right? They try to grow the team. What would be your step to help them designing this compensation structure that is anti-oppressive?
I'll try to tell you how I approach it with my clients that I do this work with. So first of all, is really an assessment of where they are from a DE&I perspective. Because if they're not ready for these concepts, which are pretty, I mean, some of these are pretty out there. I mean, this is not the way that everybody is doing compensation now. If they're really committed to DE&I, JEDI work, right, that and they understand kind of the concepts of systemic oppression, and they want to break free from that, that's kind of a building block. That's the number one thing that we've got to make sure that they're cool with, right? And then the second piece is really kind of assessing what it is that they are trying to accomplish, right? So some people, their big thing is transparency. They want to make sure that they can be transparent about everything. That can help dictate some of the choices that they're making. There's a lot of things to consider with the anti-oppressive pay, and trying to do everything at one time is a little bit mind-numbing. But what is it that they're trying to do? And then I would take them through kind of these six different concepts. That levels is one. How many levels do you want to have? How few can you use to express what's going on in the organization? Look at functional differences in pay. How important is it for them to have different functions paid differently? If it's not, how about everybody in the same pool and using the same ranges? Individual performance. How important is it to them to have individual performance impact pay? If it's not super important, is it important to them to have organizational measures of performance and reward systems that reward company performance? The next piece is transparency. You know, again, some of this is being dictated to us by law in terms of having salary ranges on the job postings and things like that. But beyond that, how much do they want employees to know about their own pay, about pay for other people in the organization? Making calls on that is important. Access, again, this can be something that is easier for folks to do from the start, right? How much do they want to make sure that all of the programs are accessible to all of the employees? And this comes into play with things not only like benefits, but if the company is going to give away equity, are they only going to do that for their C-suite or their founders, or are they going to invite everybody in the organization to participate in that? So access is the next piece. And then market. So how do they use the market to help them benchmark, and when are they going to depart from that? So those are the steps that I take my clients through.
What is the right level of transparency?
That is a big question. I think it depends on the organization. And I also think that for my clients who have not been transparent, it's not like a switch, right? It's not either everything's transparent or nothing's transparent. It's like a dimmer light. You know, you want to be thoughtful about how much you light you bring into the process, because transparency also means education, right? People need to understand. You can't just go, okay, well, this is what everybody makes. You got to make sure that they understand, you know, well, what are the levels in the organization? What do the salary ranges mean? What does it take to get promoted? You need all of these things to be known before you start opening it up to everybody.
I love the way you said that it involves vision and planning. Mm-hmm. Everything does, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Now, we know that compensation structures has a heavy impact to profitability. When you are helping clients to create this anti-oppressive pay, how do you balance between doing what is right in terms of compensation structures and profitability?
You know, this is such a great question. And it's come into kind of high relief with the pandemic and, you know, the great resignation and all of that kind of jazz. And I do feel like it comes back to that vision and intent piece, right? What is the vision for how employees will be treated and what the organization thinks is appropriate and fair? I mean, but if you have an organization that you really want to be steeped in social justice and in taking care of your employees, making sure that you have enough revenue to service those higher salaries and better benefits programs should be part of the equation. And if you can't make the financial model work with treating people the way that you think they should be treated, then you need to go back to the business model, not to now we're just going to treat people badly. You know, we're going to pay the minimum wage. I mean, you could, but you can't really pay people minimum wage and tout the values of social responsibility.
I love this because you said revenue. There are two components in revenue. It's quantity and pricing, right? Quantity, obviously, it's how you market the business, how you market the product, how you bring in clients or customers to your business, right? Ties into your business model, obviously, right? The second thing is the pricing. How do you price your service? How do you price your product? And then I think when we talk about compensation structures, you are very right to say, what is your vision? And when you know your vision, you have to go back to your financial model and basically said, okay, how can I structure this? So the vision on how I treat my employees is in alignment. When a client comes to you, can you say that every single one of them ready to create an anti-oppressive pay and then have they also look at their financial model to make sure that they can do this?
Well, I think everybody who's coming to me is willing to make some sort of an investment and some sort of adjustment to lessen the oppressive impacts and biases, right? Not everybody is willing to go to an extreme. And some of them really are looking to help document some of the anti-oppressive things that they're already doing. So that's what is going on. But some of my clients, like this one nonprofit that I was telling you about, made a humongous, humongous investment in paying their people. That was their intent. So, you know, I think it depends on the organization's readiness. Some of it depends on their budget too. And, you know, again, not everything about anti-oppressive pay costs more. You know, taking the individual performance out of pay, you can do that and keep your budget completely neutral. Transparency, you can do that and keep your budget completely neutral. Many of the other things do require shifts, but some of them just don't cost anything. Some of them cost minimally. The bigger quote-unquote cost is the mental investment, the commitment to diversity, equity, inclusion, that is required to kind of reframe the work that they're doing. And that's a lot more rare.
Now, before I let you go, is there anything that you want to add to the conversation that I haven't asked you?
The final thing that I'd like to leave the audience with is this is really about intentionality. It's intentionality from who you want to be as a business. It's intentionality about how you want to price your services. It's intentionality about how you want to treat your employees. And they're all integrated. And so it shouldn't just be left to happenstance. You should make these decisions consciously and well in order to lead your business to where you'd like it to go.
Kate, this has been amazing. So please share with my audience, where can they find you and connect with you?
My website is katedixon.org. That's KATEDIXON.org. That's the easiest way to find out more about what I do. I've got a blog there that has a ton of articles that you can read for free. If you want to reach out to me, please do so at info@katedixon.org. And I would love to hear from you.
Kate, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
And that's bring us to the end of another episode. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Her CEO Journey, the business finance podcast for mission-driven women entrepreneurs. When you are ready to grow to the next level and seeking a finance team and a fractional CFO who are all in on your mission and can help you maximize profit to make a bigger social impact, connect with us at theprofitreimagine.com/letschat.